ओम नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, entitled Purusha Sukta, confirmed. So this morning we have text number 32. Shijami
Shijami
Tannit Yukto
Tanniyukto
Aham
Aham
Aro
Aro
Arati
Tadvashaha
Vishvam
Purusha
Rupena
Paripati
Tri Shakti
Drik
Srijami Tam Niyukto Ham Arohati Tadvashaha
Arohati Tadvashaha
Vishvam Purusha Rupena Paripati Trishakti Drip
Paripati Trishakti Drip
Srijami Tam Niyukto Ham
Srijami Tam Niyukto Ham
Arohati Tadvashaha
Arohati Tadvashaha
Vishvam Purusha Rupena Paripati Trishakti Drit
Paripati Trishakti Drit
Srijami Tam Niyukto Ham
Srijami Tam Niyukto Ham
Arohati Tadvashaha
Arohati Tadvashaha
Vishvam Purusha Rupena
Vishvam Purusha Rupena
Paripati Trishakti Drit
Paripati Trishakti Drit
Srijami Tam Niyukto Ham
Arohati Tadvashaha
Arohati Tadvashaha Vishvam Purusha Rupena
Paripati Trishakti Drik
Paripati Trishakti Drik
Srijami Tam
Niyukto Ham Arohati Tadvashaha
Vishvam Purusha Rupena
Paripati Trishakti Drit
Srijami
Tam Niyukto Ham Arohati Tadvashaha
Vishvam Purusha Rupena
Paripati Trishakti Drit
Srijami Tam Niyukto Ham
Arohati Tadvashaha
Vishvam
Purusha Rupena
Paripati Trishakti
Drit Ladies
Srijami Tam Niyukto Ham
Srijami Tam Niyukto Ham
Arohati Tadvashaha
Arohati Tadvashaha
Vishvam Purusha Rupena
Vishvam Purusha Rupena
Paripati Trishakti Drit
Paripati Trishakti Drit
Srijami
Tam Niyukto Ham
Arohati Tadvashaha
Vishvam Purusha Rupena
Paripati
Trishakti Drit Srijami
Do create
Tat By his
Niyuktah
appointment.
Aham.
I. Haraha. Lord Shiva. Harati. Destroys. Tat Vashaha.
Under his subordination.
Vishvam, the whole universe.
Purusha,
the personality of Godhead.
Rupena,
by his eternal form.
Puripati,
maintains. Tri Shakti Drik, the controller of three energies. Translation. Lord Brahma is speaking this to Narada Muni in the context. So Brahma says, by his will, that means the Lord, by his will I create. Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself, in his eternal form, as the personality of Godhead, maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The conception of one without a second is clearly confirmed here. The one is Lord Vasudeva, and only by his different energies and expansions are different manifestations, both in the material and in the spiritual world, maintained. In the material world also, Lord Vasudeva is everything. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:19, Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Everything is Vasudeva only. In the Vedic hymns also, the same Vasudeva is held to be supreme. It is said in the Vedas, Vasudeva Paro Brahman Nachanyortosti Tattvataha. In fact, there is no greater truth than Vasudeva. And Lord Krishna affirms the same truth in the Bhagavad Gita 7:7. Mataha parataram nanyat. There is nothing above me, Lord Krishna. So the conception of oneness, as overly stressed by the impersonalist, is also accepted by the personalist devotee of the Lord. The difference is that the impersonalist denies personality in the ultimate issue, whereas the devotee gives more importance to the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam explains this truth in the verse under discussion. Lord Vasudeva is one without a second, but because he is all-powerful, he can expand himself as well as display his omnipotencies. The Lord is described here as omnipotent. Some prophet always says omnipotent, but at least in the Western part of the English-speaking word, it's omnipotent. In India, it's omnipotent. The Lord is described here as omnipotent, or omnipotent, by his three energies, Tri, Shakti, Drik. So primarily, his three energies are internal, marginal, and external. This external energy is also displayed in the three modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Similarly, the internal potency is also displayed in three spiritual modes, Samvit, Sandini, and Hladini. The marginal potency, or the living entity, is also spiritual, prakritim vidhi me param. But the living entities are never equal to the Lord. The Lord is nirasta samya atishay. In other words, no one is greater than or equal to the Supreme Lord. So the living entities, including even such great personalities as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are all subordinate to the Lord. In the material world also, in his eternal form of Vishnu, he maintains and controls all the affairs of the demigods, including Brahma and Shiva. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminuti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivishesha Sunyavari Paschacha De Satarane Om Gyanam Timaram Dasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Miritam Jain Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanshakalpa Trivishcha Krita Sindhu Deva Chapatitanam Bhakti Vyo Vaishnava Vyo Namaha. So Brahma is speaking, Shijami, Aham, I create, because Brahma is the creator in charge of the mode of passion. So wherever there's creation, things being made or constructed or developed or procreated by sexual means, that's the mode of passion is prominent. So the whole creation, when things are beginning, this is Lord Brahma who does this. So he's the creator. But he says, niyuktaha, under his appointment. And he's not doing it on his own, but under him. That is to say, the Lord. Hara harati tadvashaha, and Hara, who's Lord Shiva, he destroys. Lord Shiva is in charge of the mode of ignorance, tamogun. Whenever things are flying into pieces or falling apart or rotting, decaying, broken down, this is the mode of ignorance, tamogun. So Lord Shiva is the mode of that, in charge of that mode. So the universe is wound up at the end, it's destroyed. So that's Lord Shiva's specialty. So he destroys, but tadvashaha, under his subordination. Vishvam purusha rupena paripatti. And the whole universe is maintained, paripatti, purusha rupena, by the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that Lord is called Tri Shakti Drik, the controller of three energies, Tri Shakti. In the translation, these three energies here refers to the three material energies, that is to say, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Those are three energies. So they are working under the, all three are working under the Lord, Tri Shakti Drik. The energy of the mode of passion under Lord Brahma, of ignorance under Lord Shiva, and the Lord himself takes charge of the mode of goodness. That's because none of this would exist without goodness. Because goodness, sattva, it means anything that is maintained. So without maintenance, nothing could happen. Just sattva, existence itself. Sattva, when you say sat, as in sat chit ananda, when you say sat, it means not only that which is, but that which is real, and that which is eternal, and also that which is perfect or good. All these things are there in sat. And that's the And in the spiritual world, there is only sattva. There's only goodness. There's no mode of passion. There's no mode of ignorance. Because in the spiritual world, everything is eternal. Nothing comes into being. Nothing is destroyed. Everything is eternally maintained. So that's called Shuddha Sattva, pure Sattva, or Vishuddha Sattva. And of course, that's the abode of Lord Vishnu. So when in the material world, some of that sattva has to be here, otherwise it couldn't even exist. So he personally takes charge of the sattva, not personally, through his direct expansion. Krishna says, Eka amshena stito jagat, with a little piece of myself, Eka amsha, I maintain this whole universe. This means super soul, which he calls a amsha. As far as creating, Lord Brahma is an agent or an instrument of the Lord for creation. He's called a Shaktiyavesh avatar. So he's not independent. Generally, Lord Brahma is a jiva, but who is given powers to act just like God. So it's called Shaktiyavesha. He's empowered by the Lord for creation. Otherwise, no jiva can create the universe. But when you're empowered by the Lord, do it. Then you do it. He doesn't do the whole thing. The creation has two divisions, sarga and visarga. There's the first creation by which the 24 elements are produced: earth, water, fire, air, ether, and so on. The objects of the sensory powers, the objects of the senses, the basic ingredients. That's done by Mahavishnu when he glances over the Mahatattva. Mahatattva is the undifferentiated urshtof, primordial junk. And then it's energized by the glance of the Lord, and then it begins to differentiate. And earth, water, fire, air, ether come out, and mind, intelligence, all the different material elements, all the powers of the senses, all these false ego also is there, everything, all the basic ingredients. That's the first creation called sarga. And then there's visarga, the second creation. That's when Lord Brahma takes these ingredients that have been made already, produced out of the energy of the Lord, and assembles them into bodies and planets and so on. That's the secondary creation. In the Bible, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth and so on. This is actually describing visarga. And the activities that are described are actually those of Brahma. In that account, it seems as though matter or darkness or something is already there, but it doesn't say where it comes from. But this is the more complete story is in the Bhagavatam. So Brahma is the secondary creator. As you'll find a similar account in the Greek philosopher Plato, in the Timaeus, like this. So that's Brahma. Lord Shiva, who is destroyed, he's also subordinate to the Lord. He's not, Lord Shiva is not a jiva. But he's a form of Krishna. But because he is very closely associated with the modes of ignorance, he takes on a different character. and becomes like a jiva in some respects. So he has his own Shiva Tattva. In some ways, he's called Mahadeva as the Lord of this world, because in some ways the whole material world is also the mode of ignorance. Everyone, it's all there for the deluded soul, so everyone is infected by the mode of ignorance. So therefore, he's the Lord of this world. Just like in Christianity, who's the Lord of this world?
Jesus?
Huh? No, no, not at all. Just the opposite, the devil. Some of the functions that the Christians ascribe to Satan or the devil are really Lord Shiva's functions. They see that function as separated from, as though there's someone independent of God. There's no one independent of God. So actually it's Lord Shiva. Sometimes what we would call diabolical work, devilish work, is done by Lord Shiva. But that's his job. And he does it also on behalf of the Lord, actually. Even when Christian theologians, they think about the devil, how can anyone, are there two gods? Is there God and the devil? Are there really two gods fighting? No, there's only one God. So then they also have to conclude that in some way the devil is God's servant, and then they stop thinking about it. I've seen this. the real thing is Lord Shiva, who's in charge of the mode of ignorance. So he's his agent. And then there's Lord Vishnu, who maintains everything and is in charge of all the three energies. So somewhere else in Bhagavatam, there's kind of a quick history of creation. In the beginning, there is Lord Brahma and the Prajapatis. The Prajapatis means the persons that Lord Brahma produced, who then their job is to go out and procreate, create other living beings. Like Daksha, but there's so many Prajapatis. Their thing is to have sex and fill the universe with all living beings. So there's a mode of passion. In the beginning, there is Brahma and the Prajapatis. In the middle, there's Lord Vishnu, and his agents are the Rajarshis. There's Lord Vishnu and the saintly kings. And in the end, there's Lord Shiva and the atheist full of anger. Those are his agents. Because he's in charge of the mode of goodness, so all kinds of devilish creatures, ghosts, and so on, the whole zoo of vampires, werewolves, bhutas, pretas, pistulas, they're all under Lord Shiva's. He takes charge of those people. And they are destructive. So when the time for destruction comes, they become very powerful. Mm. Well, that's the end, Lord Shiva. So when Prabhupada discusses this, he says the conception of one without a second is clearly confirmed here. Everywhere, the Lord, the Absolute Truth, is described as one without a second. You see this in every place. In two ways, actually. When the Absolute Truth is described as impersonal, this is a very important truth for them. There's only one thing and no second thing. And when personal, too, there's no second thing. One without a second. Ekam eva advitiya Brahman. This is in the Upanishads. I forgot which one. Brahman is that besides which there is no second thing. That means to say, let's talk about words. We say this world that we see is the relative world. Now the word relative means things are related to each other. We also say in English, I have relatives, my mother, my father. These are my relatives because I'm related to them. So the world of relativity means there are many individual things and they're related to each other and therefore they're undergoing changes. One thing is almost defined in terms of something else. And things in this world are limited because they're relative. In other words, there's many things. I'm this and not that. I'm an individual because my boundary ends here and I'm related to the space and the room, the floor, the other people, and so on. So this relativity makes me limited. So when people try to understand the absolute, the opposite, spiritual realm must be opposite, it must be absolute. The absolute simply means not relative, not related. So therefore there cannot be any second thing. There cannot be any second thing. As soon as there's second thing, we're talking about what is unlimited. As soon as there's the absolute truth and something else, then the absolute truth is limited by that something else and enters into a relationship. And there's a greater reality which contains both of them. And so this is how the thinking goes, the speculation. And there's truth to that. So that means that when we talk about the transcendence of the absolute truth means there is no second thing. Now, there's different ways of now trying to understand this. The Mayavadi philosophers, therefore, deny the energies of the absolute truth. The real core doctrine or teaching of Mayavadi philosophy is that the absolute has no energies. Because if there were energies, there would be a second thing. That's their understanding. There are no energies. Therefore, they think in reality, there is only this one thing. And that one thing is Brahman. And it is undifferentiated. There's no you, there's no me, there's no this, there's no relativity. It's the same everywhere. And there's no energies, no second thing. So that's why the Mayavadi philosophy actually teaches that this world is not the energies of Brahman. In the highest realization. We can speak like that, the Vedas speak like that, but ultimately there are no energies. Whenever we talk about God and His energies, we're talking in a conventional, ordinary way. We're not talking in the Paramartha manner, we're talking in the Vyavaharika way, the conventional way. This is their philosophy. So this is how they come to this understanding. Now the Vedanta Sutra does not actually say this. It says that the world is created by the transformation of Brahman, parinama. Because of Brahman. See, Brahman is defined that from which everything emanates. So ultimately, the Mayavadis have to say this isn't really true. I mean, Shankaracharya actually does this. He said this statement janmadasyataha is not really true. It's only a way of talking. It's not really true. The Absolute Truth has no energies. So he cannot create, maintain, and destroy. I mean, it's amazing to do this, to the statement of Vedanta Sutra, but that's what he does. You can read about Prabhupada's discussion of this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 7, where it's actually Lord Chaitanya's discussion of this with the Mayavadis at Benares. And they had this discussion about Vedanta. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says Shankaracharya really implies that Vyasadeva is wrong. So we accept that there's the Lord and his energies. Now, does that compromise the nature, the idea of absoluteness? Is the Lord, therefore, relative and not absolute? Is he limited because he has energies? See, we think on the other hand, if he has no energy, isn't that also a limitation? How will energy... Well, the way to understand it is the energies are also the Lord himself in another form. And that's one of the points of this verse and Prabhupada's purport. You see Krishna, and there's Brahma, and there's Shiva. Now, those expansions of Krishna, Brahma and Shiva, they don't limit him because they're completely his extensions in some way or another. They are himself in another form. And what about the energies, goodness, passion, and ignorance? These are also Krishna in another form. So there's nothing but Krishna. That's one half the truth. There's nothing but Krishna. The other half of the truth is nothing is Krishna except his own original personality. And to put it another way, nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. Can you keep that in your head? Probably not. Huh? Because it seems to us, because of our limited material mind, to be contradictory. But that's our limitation. But this is the expression of achincha beda abeda tattva, the teaching of inconceivable achincha. So that word is there, achincha. It's inconceivable, beda and abeda, simultaneously difference and non-difference. But here's how to deal with this. Don't try to understand it by mental speculation, but try to see the world and see everything in that way. Nothing is different from, or you can repeat it. Just like the Zen Buddhists, sometimes they have some statement that looks contradictory, called a koan, and they meditate on that contradiction until the mind blows or something happens to Satori. So this is, nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. I've taken that from the last purport in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says. I've changed the grammar a little bit, but it's Prabhupada's statement. Nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. So what does that mean? That means everything you see is Krishna's energies. Yet at the same time, Krishna is more than his energies. Of course, the example that Jiva Goswami gives is that of the sun and the sunshine. The sun is the energetic source and the sunshine is the energies, the energy of the sun. So on the one side, we certainly make a difference between the sun and the sunshine. And when I say the sun is in the room, I don't mean the sun, planet, globe is there burning on the floor. I mean the energy of the sun is there in the room. And we have to distinguish. On the other side, where does the sun end and the sunshine begin? You start to think of this, you have to see, well, actually this is one continuous entity. There's no difference between the sun and the sunshine. So this is the relationship between something and its energy. So this is the way he does it. So here we see there's these three. There are a lot of times we are taught in school and even college that Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are the Hindu Trinity. This is very misleading. No comparison at all. Like this. And many, sometimes people think they're three gods. Vishnu is one among the three. And this is a misunderstanding. In a way, this is the Mayavadis say, yeah, they're all three the Lord. They see them as independent of each other and kind of equal. But they think when you come to the absolute truth, all three disappear, they dissolve. They're actually part of Maya. That's why they're called Mayavadis. They teach that Lord Vishnu is Maya. They're part of Maya. So the real conception of oneness is, without a second, is that in a way Lord Brahma is not different. In another way, Lord Shiva is not different. And in another way, even the modes of material nature are not different. There's different kinds of differences. So these distinctions are there. So this is what Prabhupada is saying here. Now the other way of applying one without a second is, well, we see it in the verse Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yogadati Kaman from the Katha Upanishad. This says Nityaha means eternal, but that in Sanskrit is singular. There's one eternal. Nityanam, it's a genitive plural. There's one eternal among many, many, many eternals. One eternal being among many, many, many eternal beings. And in Chaitanya, there's one singular conscious being among many, many, many conscious beings. So there's this one, grammatically, there's singular and plural. And then the next line, Eko Bahunam, one and the many again. The one and the many. And it's Eko Bahunam Yo Vridati Kama. The many are dependent on the one. The one is independent, the many are dependent. So it says that there's two categories of living beings. The first category has only one member. In mathematics, they talk about sets. You know, there's a set with only one member. That's the category of God. In other words, he's one without a second. In the category of the one, that's what there is. There's only one member. There's no second God. In the category of many, there are all kinds of... So in this sense of one without a second, no one is equal to or no one is greater than he. So these are the two senses of one without a second. And both apply. That Krishna has no equal. There's no one else in the category of God. There's no second thing. And the reason is that's actually not part, there's no question of many gods, because Krishna is not simply Ishvara. What we say by God is Ishvara, controller. In principle, there can be many controllers. But Krishna's not just Ishvara, but he's Parameshvara. He's also the absolute truth. And in principle, there's only one absolute truth. So when we should understand this about Krishna, he doesn't happen to be the supreme. We cannot think that somehow he did something to become the Lord. That he was elected, or appointed, or took it over by force. This doesn't happen on the level of the absolute truth. He simply is eternally the absolute truth. So if you want to take Krishna's position, it's not possible. If you want to take Indra's position, yeah, you can, in principle. Because Indra is an appointed being. Indra has his position for the duration of one Manu. Then all the Indra and all a bunch of demigods and the seven sages, it's just like when there's an election and a new party takes control, everybody goes out and another group comes in. So this happens automatically at the end of every Manu, and someone else becomes the Indra. And somebody else becomes the fire god, and somebody else becomes a, and so on. But this doesn't take place with Krishna. He's always the, because he's the ultimate source of all energies. He's the self-sufficient being. He's the self-sustaining sustainer of all others. So he's the foundation of existence. Another thing in this verse, let's talk about this tree shakti drik, the tree shaktis. Prabhupada mentions different kinds of three shaktis. Yeah, there's also he's the controller of three shaktis, three energies. It can refer to the internal, external, and marginal energies. So although the Lord's energy is one, it's manifest principally in three ways. Huh? So these are called the internal energy, external energy, and in-between energy. The margin, the krinza, the borderline energy, can go either way. So bahiranga shakti is internal potency. Is that potency which displays the spiritual world. External potency, it displays the material world. And then the marginal potency generates all the living entities, who are tatasta. Tata in Sanskrit means like the shore or a bank of a river. So there are animals that live on the bank, sometimes they're in the water, sometimes they're on the land, the crabs or frogs, and they go back and forth. Snails and so on. So we're like that. We are actually spiritual. Prabhupada mentions this in the purport. But we can also spend some time on land, in the material world. So we're tatasta, the borderline. So that's 1-3. And then the internal potency also has three divisions. Samvit, Sandini, and Hladini. Samvit is the potency by which Krishna knows himself, knows everything and causes others to know him, his knowledge potency. It's called Sandit. Sandini, the potency by which he sustains his existence and the existence of everything, everyone else. And Hladini, the potency by which he feels bliss, and causes that potency which causes others to feel bliss too. So these are the sometimes called the three internal potencies. And then, so there's three, and then three, and three. Nice, neat pattern. Then in the material energy, there's goodness, passion, and ignorance, creation, maintenance, and destruction, these three energies. So these are, this Tri Shakti can refer to all these, to these three groups of threes, like that. So he mentions this. So we should always understand this. We are being told this so we know how to look at the world. We know how things are going and how gradually, by absorption in Krishna, we will see this way. We can see the real world. So we'll see everything as it actually is in connection with Krishna. Then there's no separation from Krishna at any time. And how is this done? By devotional service. Prabhupada once remarked that people are attracted to this pantheistic vision. The idea that nature itself is divine. This was big in the 19th century. Other poets and philosophers like to see even nature is God. They think nature is God. The pantheism sometimes is like that nature is God. Or at least that nature is divine somehow or other. So people want this pantheistic idea to see God in everything and everything in God. But Prabhupada said, if you want to do that, if we want to do that, we have to engage everything in God's service. So that's why people cannot see like this. See, ultimately, everything is spiritual. If spiritual means related to Krishna, then everything is spiritual. Because what there is either Krishna himself or things that are in relationship to Krishna, Krishna's energies. So Krishna and Krishna's energies, that comprises the whole absolute truth. So everything is divine. No question about it. So we have to see this way. But we cannot actually see it because we are not using everything in Krishna's service. What are we using it for? For sense gratification, our service, our enjoyment. And therefore we've separated ourselves and the sense objects from Krishna. We've created this illusion of difference because I'm excluding myself. When there's sense gratification, that's the act of atheism. It's excluding Krishna. So as long as I'm using things in that way, I will not be able to see. I'm turning spirit into matter by these activities. It's not really turning it into matter, but it's covering it with the illusion of matter. So when we engage everything in Krishna's service, the spiritual nature of everything becomes revealed. So this is stated so in the Bhagavad Gita. When you perform yajna, sacrifice for Krishna, brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmavno brahmanahutam, everything that's involved when there's a sacrifice, work is done for the sake of Krishna, everything becomes Brahman. It regains its spiritual quality. Any questions or comments?
You said that Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma are not different. I didn't get that.
They're not different. Well, because Vishnu remains the supreme. But Brahma is a jiva, so he's Krishna's marginal energy. So in that sense, he's Krishna's energy. He's connected to Krishna. So simultaneously different and not different. And because he's working on Krishna's behalf to do this work of creation. People have asked me, devotees who have asked, were the Jews worshipping Lord Brahma? Because everything that's described about God is really describing Lord Brahma. So when they're talking about God in the Old Testament, are they talking about just Brahma, not about Krishna? And the answer, as far as I can see, is that it depends on their consciousness, in a way. Because you could say, yes, Brahma is being described. But since everything Brahma does is on behalf of Krishna, it's Krishna who's actually doing it anyway, just through his agent. So it ultimately depends on your level of understanding.
And if we do something for Krishna, we are Krishna.
No, not, yeah, but you cannot say, I am God. You have to say, I am God's servant, but you are Krishnaized. You become like Krishna. Just like last night we read how we attain the same form, the same place as Krishna. Right? Mm-hmm. So the relationship is Krishna is there. If I want to take Krishna's place, if I think I'm Krishna, I become Krishna. Then actually, where's the relationship? It's gone. There's no relationship whatsoever. And I don't become Krishna. Another kind of illusion. Yeah. But in a sense, we are already, it's Krishna's energy that's already there. We just don't see our relationship. See, we don't see, when we're engaged in material activities, we don't see the whole. We can't experience the oneness of everything. When we engage in Krishna service, gradually we see how everything is united. So everything is one in Krishna, that's true. Everything is actually spirit, that's true. But there are different kinds of spirit. This oneness includes variety in it. It doesn't exclude variety. You see, there's a mistake when people are trying to arrive by thinking at this idea of one. They want to arrive at, and then they do by this method of contrast. They say, okay, here in the material world, we have the many, or the relative. So the spiritual reality is going to be the opposite. It's one. So now we try to understand this one. And arrive at this one. And so they have this idea, the one that excludes or is different from the many. But you see, that can't be the last word, because in your thinking, there's still two things. There's the one and the many. When you negate something, when you say one and not the many, the idea of two is still there. Your thinking is still relative. You still have your one and the many. Because this idea the one depends on and is attached to and related to the idea of the many. So the real one has to somehow combine both the many and the one together, where there are one and many at the same time. So the one has to include within itself the many. So that's the ultimate idea, is that the absolute truth has variety. And the word for that is vishesha. There are differentiation or particular things in transcendence. And another word for the Maya bodies is nirvishesha. They deny there's variety. There's two kinds, nirvishesha and shunyavadi. Shunyavadi is the voidus. So we accept this vishesha. So we're also part of that vishesha, also part of the varieties. So we have to understand how oneness takes place. Krishna remains the supreme, I remain subordinate, but as far as Relating to Krishna, we are one in purpose, we are one in will, we are united in action, in this way, so the relationship is there. Yeah.
Where is the difference of the activities between Shiva or the devil and Kali?
Kali is more like the personality of Kali. Yeah. He's got. I mean, Kali couldn't work without Lord Shiva. And it says that Lord Shiva did certain things just to help Kali, like teach the Mayavada philosophy, for example. So it seems like because Kali is the age of quarrel and the mode of ignorance is more prominent, so certainly Kali takes advantage of the work of Lord Shiva. But they're not the same thing. What the devil is, I don't know. That there's many, if there are many demons, but there's not one big anti-God, you know. All I'm saying is that many of the things, it may well also be, if you those people who are Shaivites in India, one group of them anyway, who worship Lord Shiva, everything they do sounds just like descriptions of devil worship from medieval Europe. Sounds just like it. Orgies and sexual things and all this stuff. You read what Shaivites do. They sometimes go into graveyards. They chant their mantras sitting on bodies. They eat dead bodies. They have sex with dead bodies. This is, oh yeah, these guys are really far out. Many things that in the West we would put people in a mental hospital and keep them locked up. In India, it's a religion. It's in the mode of ignorance. It's just mental illness is in the mode of ignorance, and that's how it's dealt with. So these Shaivites do like this. You can read about it. I mean, not all Shaivites do that, but the people that practice the so-called left-handed tantra. That's what they live in these great. I mean, you know, it's pretty far out what they do sometimes. And anyway, I suspect that the people have always worshipped, even in Europe, some lord with in charge of the mode of ignorance. People have always been in the mode of ignorance, and they have their religion in the mode of ignorance. So there was some pagan god, and I suspect derived from Lord Shiva. Because actually one time this Vedic culture was spread all over, and so when it retreated, it left behind its traces. You know, you can trace the word Zeus, the Greek god Zeus, is from the Sanskrit Dyaus, which is a name for a Vedic god. And most of the functions of Zeus are those of Indra. And then you have Jupiter, which just is the Jupiter, the Roman Jupiter, is Deus Pater, Zeus. The Father, God the Father, you know, Jupiter, Zeus Pater. So these are all related to Vedic culture. So I think probably between what in the West became known as the devil and Lord Shiva in the Vedic conception, there's probably an historical link. But they've separated. This all, see, and the devil, well, a large part of the idea of the devil comes from Persia, actually, which is close to India. And about the same time as during early Christianity, there was a religion from Persia, that's now Iran, called Mani, started by somebody called Mani, called Manichaeism. And they taught, the Manichaeists taught, that there are two gods. And this spread all throughout the Roman Empire, Manichaeism. But there are two, ultimately there are two gods. There's a god of light, and there's a god of darkness. And the whole world is really the battleground of the war between these two gods, the good god and the evil god. And that the prediction is that ultimately the good god, there'll be a final battle, and the good god will defeat the evil god. So Saint Augustine, before he was a Christian, he was in this sect.
Who was it?
Augustine.
Oh,
Now he was in the sect, and then he became a Christian. But between that, he became a follower of the Plotinus, the Neo-Platonic philosopher. From Plotinus, he actually learned that you do not need two things to explain evil. You see so much evil, so it was explained. Yeah, there's an evil god. So there's a good God, we see good and we see evil, and we see them at war in the world, so there must be two gods. But Plotinus, Platonic philosophy, says, no, there's only one God. He had a very clear conception of an absolute truth. And what is evil? It's the absence of good, just as dark is the absence of light. So to explain darkness, we don't have to have, here's the bulb which produces light, and here's another bulb which produces darkness. Mm-hmm. Actually, we just have light, but sometimes light is absent, and so there is darkness. So then he gave up his Manichaean philosophy, and then became a Christian. Actually, there are three steps in his spiritual journey of St. Augustine. Yeah. So this is so from this Manichaeism. This is where I think some of the ideas of the devil came in, because in most Christians' ideas, they're basically, who really believe in the devil, they believe in two gods, and they believe that ultimately one god will be defeated. That's really how they. We have them in America, big time. These people. Yeah, so that's what they think. But there's only one God. Okay, anything else?
So there's like say Saint Augustine, there are saint people in different religion. And what it means, which stage they attain if they are saint, and due to what they attain the stage, saint. Hmm? If they are saints.
Yeah, that's what they call them that. Hmm?
They're not necessarily.
It depends. You have to look at a case by case basis, and you can see. So sometimes you have to say that sometimes people have some degree of realization on some level. You can see what it is. Sometimes they're very good at it, but I think you have to deal with them one by one, rather than accept them all, or even reject them all, also.
Maybe.
You can't do blanket rejection, you can't do blanket exception. You look at what they say. I think there's lots of good things in St. Augustine. And he says some things that actually makes Krishna consciousness clearer, to me anyway, because I studied him before, and some of the things he says is a way, it turns out to be saying the same thing that's in Prabhupada's books, but he says in a way that's in some ways makes it clear to me, because he's a Western person. and so he has another way of saying the same thing that makes it a little more clear. So I would say, well, that's pretty good that he knows this. Like, for example, he has a theory of knowledge, which he calls the primacy of the will in knowledge. And basically this says you do not know something unless you love it. Or at least the beginning of love is interest. He's explaining why is it that some people don't see God or understand God or know God. Because they're not interested in God. They don't love, they're not attracted. Certainly, if you really know something or know some person, you have to like them. Otherwise, you'll never find out. That's very good. Anyway, like that. But she has this more psychological kind of a bent, which you don't see so much in the way that Indian people are. But Western people sense of Augustine, actually, there's more intros, there's a certain kind of way of being psychological, looking at your own mind, working, and seeing it as your kind of personal story. That's a more Western style. He wrote, Augustine is famous for writing his autobiography, called Confessions in English, and basically how I became a Christian. He tells the whole story. That's the first, you see that at the very beginning of the medieval West. But you don't see, the only time I see any autobiography of from our tradition, or an Indian person, is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. No, and nobody else left any, this is the story of my life. That's an interesting fact, huh? Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, because he's already half Western anyway, because of his education and everything like that. So there's just different ways of the mind being structured. So that's why somebody like Augustine may be more clear to us. Did you have some?
You mentioned something about Parinama. I was long time thinking about his theory of Parinama God.
Yeah.
I could not understand what's his actually.
Yeah. Shankaracharya says, It's what the Vedanta says is that the world is created, and actually it's in the sutra the word parinama. Parinama thought, it comes from parinama, transformation of Brahman. So Shankaracharya says, well, Brahman is unchangeable. How can there be parinama? How can there be transformation? So this must be just a way of speaking, and it's not really true, and therefore there are no energies. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, how can Vyasadeva be wrong? He says Parinama. And but what it is, it's Shakti Parinama. It is not the transformation of Brahman, but the transformation of Brahman's energies. That's the difference. So the real doctrine, Chaitanya says, is Shakti Parinama Vada, the doctrine that the world is a transformation of the energies of Brahman. That's how he explains this word. And so therefore Brahman is not changed. There's also in the Upanishads this Om Purnam Madat Purnam Idam Purnam Purnam, that Brahman is such that it's complete. You take out 100%, it's still 100%. So he's not trans. He does not. If you think that if his energies go out, then he would be diminished, just as the sun actually is running down slowly. Its energy is going out and is becoming less and less. But the nature of Brahman is that it is so purna, so full, so complete, that even though you took everything out, it would still be full. So it's not decreased.
Okay.
Yeah?
But in the material world, we say the energy stays the same and the form changes. And in the spiritual world, you said the energy changes.
No, the world is created by the change of energies. That Brahman itself is unchanged, but his energies work, and then they undergo various, produce various forms and so on like that. and they act like that. So this changing and transformation takes place by the energies. But you would think that Brahman itself would then become, decreased. The energies going out is not decreased. Okay? Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.